50-minute mark on the Fan. That is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge on Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Donnie Football in for the guys on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Charlie Borges is with me behind the glass. We are together until 6. Josh Roundtree on the Fan this evening from 6 until 10:35. Right now, we go out to the Fan Hotline, which is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And that is where we find our good friend, Pirates reporter Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette. Noah, you were at Pirates Fest this weekend, and it was fun to follow along to what you were tweeting out from the Q&A session. Sounded like an ECW-like crowd in that building at times, Noah, based on what your tweets were reading as. The first answer to the event, it just got a sell the team chant. Sounded like a hostile environment that some of the Pirates front office members had to sit through.
Yeah. I don't think it was anything that they weren't expecting. As far as questions, half the questions were pre-submitted, and I'm not going to sit here and, you know, praise them too much for everything, but I will give them props. I mean, they answered the questions, or they didn't, the tough submitted questions, they didn't just throw to the wayside. Like, they picked out stuff that I'm sure a lot of disgruntled fans would have liked to ask. And then they had a long portion of the session was more of that line of questioning from people in the audience. So it's not what I'm trying to say basically is it's not like just the submitted ones were softballs. Like, those were along the same line of what you heard from the live audience. But yeah, there were a lot of very pointed and emotional questions asked to, you know, three of the more influential people in the organization.
And Ben Charrington, you know, he got asked plenty about, you know, really why haven't we've seen any notable moves. Okay, they bring back Andrew McCutchen. That's all well and good. But I know that you threw it out there as you were doing during the entire duration of the Q&A about signing some free agents to more than just one-year deals. He says we've tried, we'll continue to try. What do you have on your mind when you hear that, thinking about how they have attacked this free agency period so far? We're not too far away from spring training, and I know there's no rule about them signing a player once we get there. There's not really a rule about, hey, you know, it's late in the process here, but it is kind of getting late early out there, and they've done next to nothing.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the we've tried line, I guess the easy response will be, well, you should try harder. I get the first couple of years only, you know, making big moves internally, because that's what you do during a rebuild. You know, you sell off your aging pieces for prospects. You hope to develop them. You hope to build with the young guys that you inherited. And they did that to a certain extent. I mean, they built a farm system that never really ranked. I mean, it ranked up there at certain times during the rebuild. And, you know, they got some high draft picks and they extended guys internally, which were all decent moves. But the last two off seasons, you should shift away from that. It should be finding complementary pieces that go along with what you've developed on your own or what you inherited and continue to develop. And you can't necessarily do that on one-year deals. You're not funding any continuity by that. And I understand that this is probably an organization that's lower on the desired list for free agents for, you know, its lack of success when it comes to winning games over the last three decades. But there's an easy way to fix that. Offer them more money than other teams. It's what you want. If you really want a player, go out and get him. And that's a tough thing to do for a front office, I guess, that's financially handicapped. I mean, no one knows exactly what type of budget these guys are working with, but if it's as tight as it seems, it can be hard to get someone to agree to a multi-year commitment, because that means you're going to be dishing out a large chunk of your off-season spending capital. So I get it in a sense where I more understand why it hasn't happened. I don't think it's an acceptable reality at the end of the day. And I don't expect any multi-year deals between now and opening day. Now, I would be pleasantly shocked if that were to happen. But as you mentioned, Donnie, I mean, I fly down to Bradenton in like 3 weeks for spring training. So I don't know. I just look at the market and I don't see a lot of guys that would make sense to sign to a multi-year deal at this point if you're the Pirates. So it's probably going to be another offseason of just one-year deals.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that Charrington the other day said that he was confident the roster will be improved between now and opening day. It seems like, and let me know if you get the sense of this, Noah, they are just counting on the guys they already have to get better and help them maybe get over that playoff hump.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's nothing new. That's something that Ben has said time and time again since I've started covering the team, which was about a year ago. So, I mean, even at the deadline when everyone was begging them to do something, he said, look, we're going to do stuff, but you need to understand that, you know, the reality is they don't have the money to pay for a true difference maker. If that true difference maker is going to be on this team, it's going to be because they drafted him or acquired him via trade and developed him. And I mean, they have some difference makers here, and they're just going to need those guys to be better. They're going to need the guys who were average last year to be better. And most importantly, they're going to need a lot of the guys who disappointed last year to be better. On one hand, you look at that and you think, okay, well, if you believe in what you're doing and you believe in the ability to identify weaknesses and coach, and you believe in this new coaching staff and these new analytics people you hired, then sure, bet on yourself. But that was a very similar strategy to which they took last year. And it didn't work. Jack Sawinski never broke out of his slump. Ke'Bryan Hayes never got healthy. Henry Davis never put it together. Those were three guys they needed offense from, and they're banking on all of them again. It's, you know, it's probably not the easiest strategy to feel comfortable with if you're someone who's not in that room.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be easy for anyone. I mean, I'm going to be honest, Noah. I'm normally a Hope Springs Eternal type guy with the Buccos. You know this. You and I have had plenty of conversations even before you were on the beat. There's one guy, legitimately one guy, who I know will deliver, and that's Paul Skeens. Otherwise, it's a lot of question marks. Will Jared Jones be as good? You know, that's one of the questions. Will O'Neill Cruz do all right enough in center field to stay focused at the plate? Like, there are so many questions that is taken into account with this roster. The only guy I am 100% sure of outside of injury will be good/great is Paul Skeens.
Yeah, I think there's a couple more. I get what you're saying. I mean, Skeens is a very easy person to, you know, make that bet on, no doubt. But the only portion of the team where I'm truly optimistic in their strategy of, hey, we're banking on everyone being better, I think that the pitching staff will, the starting rotation will be better without having any additions. Simply because Paul Skeens should be better in year two. I think Jared Jones will be better in year two, especially if he can just master a third pitch, be it a changeup, or I would like it to be a curveball, which I think Brett Strom will help him with. That'll be good. I think Chandler will be better as a rookie this upcoming season than Jones was last year. And Jones was a very solid rookie starting pitcher. And if you have those three, plus we know what we're getting from Mitch Keller, which is not enough to some people, but if that's your number 3-4 guy, that's still solid. And then you have your Bailey Falter, your Johan Oviedo, two other top 100 pitching prospects in AAA, and Mike Burrows there. So that group right there that I just laid out, that's a lot better than last year's group, which included names like Marco Gonzalez, Martin Perez, Quinn Priester, you know, Jake Woodford. Like, I don't think they're going to have a guy at the caliber of Jake Woodford or Domingo Germán starting games for them this year. So if we're taking it out a little bit, I think that you can feel comfortable with the starting pitching. Now, there is, of course, an opportunity or a chance they will regress some of those guys or they could get hurt. But I think the more likelihood is that group will be good. It's just outside of that group, who do you really bank on? I think Reynolds is probably the most stable case as far as a position player. McCutchen, I think, won't completely fall off a cliff unless if his health does. And there's a couple of guys like a Nick Gonzalez, a Joey Bart, where you feel like they're not going to be terrible, but you need people to be better than just not terrible. And who's going to be above average? And you look around, you could say, okay, he probably will. He probably will. He might. You would like a lot more of those confident check marks, though, in your 1-9 that you're missing.
Talking to Pirates reporter Noah Hiles here on 93.7 The Fan. Noah, you mentioned Andrew McCutchen there. Did you get the gist, or are you getting the gist from some of the fan base of, hey, we appreciate you bringing Kutch back a couple of years ago, but you know, now that PR stunt is getting a little bit old. I thought the one question and answer that you posted the other day about why did the club re-sign Kutch rather than look for a younger player to fill that void was a little bit interesting.
Yeah, I think people just want a good lineup. And there were players available in free agency and players acquired by other teams this offseason in trades who probably could have put up better numbers than Andrew McCutchen. Now, there's two factors as to why they won't be Pirates. I mean, one, they're all probably going to be a little bit more expensive than $5 million a year. And two, it's a simple thing for the Pirates. I mean, they know that this is a guy who wants to play for them. How many free agents can you circle where you can go and say, okay, we are their top option? Andrew might be the only one. So it's easy to get that deal done. And also, I will say, to counter the people who said, oh, that position should have went to someone younger, someone who maybe can do more. While I don't necessarily disagree, I mean, this isn't a team who's in a spot to be turning away people who hit 20 home runs for them the year prior. And he's one of only a couple of guys who did that. So the fact that he provides leadership, the fact that he provides some sort of pop, the fact that he's cheap, the fact that he wants to be here. And I think that another thing that doesn't get mentioned with McCutchen is he's very fundamentally dependable in the sense where how many guys on this team do you feel comfortable with at the plate with one out, runner on third, that guy's going to hit a ground ball to the right side or hit a fly ball into the outfield or draw a walk, not just strike out or hit a ground ball to the mound or, you know, not get that run home. Andrew does that. Like, even for all of his faults now where he, you know, you can't play him in the field. He's beat up. He's old. He doesn't hit as well as he used to as far as average is concerned. The pop's even down a little bit. But, like, fundamentally, he's maybe their second best hitter as far as depending on situation stuff. So I think that's another reason why you got to have some guy on the team like that, and he checks too many boxes for them to kind of let walk.
Noah, this is one that has personal interest for me because this is what I have at home, but Travis Williams saying that Pittsburgh Sportsnet will be available on Roku this season, and they're working on making it available on other smart TVs as well. Did he dive into any sort of detail about how that will work with a Roku TV?
He did. I don't have those notes totally in front of me right now.
That just like an app, maybe?
Yeah, I don't want to answer that entirely just because, you know, so much happened that day that the Roku thing was just like, yes, it's happening on Roku. I need to write about other things that transpired during this session, but it's happening on Roku. But I will say, I do remember him talking about how their goal is to basically make it available for most smart TV brands. So that, I guess, would mean an app. They talked about how they felt their app was a success in their first year of doing it. But, you know, it would be good for the organization to make sure as many people as possible could view them through streaming or on TV, because that plays a factor in how an off season goes.
Yeah, I mean, I've had to go to some weird lengths to watch the Pirates over the last couple of years since I've gone to more of a streaming route. So hopefully they give us more clarification on that one soon. Noah, just one more time before we let you go. You go to Bradenton in 3 weeks, and you don't think they will sign really a notable free agent between now and then?
It depends what your definition of notable is. I wouldn't be shocked to see them make another big league addition to their bullpen. I don't think it's going to be anyone similar to an Aroldis Chapman like we saw last year.
Let's say like a multi-year guy, a multi-year contract.
I don't see any multi-year contracts between now and spring training. Now they could, but just looking at the market, I don't know who would make sense to make that deal for. I don't think they would do that for a corner outfielder that's still out there. Guys like Grichik, Verdugo. I mean, they don't necessarily make sense for that type of deal for this team. There are relievers that I would consider doing a multi-year deal for, but I don't know if that's the strategy for which this organization's thinking right now because of all the, you know, development projects they've took in that area of the team. I don't know if they want to commit an additional space for multiple years for what would probably make them the highest paid reliever in that bunch if they were to do a multi-year deal. So no, don't see any multi-year deals. Might see a big league deal or two before they get to Bradenton, though.
Pirates reporter Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette. Follow his stuff. Noah, thanks for taking the time, man.
Always happy to be on, Donnie.
There we go. There's our guy Noah from the PG. Coming up, little reaction to what Noah just talked about. Also, one team in baseball having no issue signing free agents. We will get to them coming up next. A debrief from our guy Charlie Borges in about 15 minutes from now. But that's all up ahead. Fan text line, that's brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. It's Donnie Football with you on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan. Donnie Football with you on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan until 6. Josh Yorish, who covers college sports for FanSided, will join us at the end of this hour. As always, we have the hodgepodge of nothingness to finish the show today. But I want to keep the baseball discussion going a little bit. I used to look forward to baseball as much as I looked forward to football. I really did. I loved baseball growing up. Absolutely loved it. It was on a similar level for me to what football is. But a question being put out there is about the LA Dodgers. Are they ruining a game I used to love and that we used to love? They signed the newest Japanese phenom on Friday night, Roki Sasaki, a career ERA of 2.02 in the Japan Pacific League. In 69 career games. He will join Shohei Ohtani with the Dodgers, who might be the best baseball player of all time when it's all said and done. No big deal. The Dodgers also went out and got Tanner Scott, the best reliever on the market. 4-year deal worth $72 million. Scott had an ERA of 1.75 with 22 saves last season in Miami and San Diego. So the main question here is, do we blame the Dodgers for this? Unfortunately, you can't. They are doing what the game allows them to do. Now, I think the deferred money thing is a bit annoying, but they are taking advantage of a no cap system. The league is letting this happen. You can't fault the team as much as you may want to. Don't hate the player, hate the game. The league has problems on the other end, too. One of those teams in this town that you probably root for, that we just got done talking about with Noah Hyles. Baseball should have a cap and a floor. That's more of the answer to parity in Major League Baseball. It's fun when a small market team with a small payroll makes a run. It is. You think of the Diamondbacks a few years ago getting to the World Series. The Guardians have been that team a couple of times. The Milwaukee Brewers, I think you could throw into that category. Maybe the Pirates could be one of those teams again at some point, like they were about a decade ago, where they put together some really good teams that felt serious about winning. But as annoying as it is to see the Dodgers do this, they are allowed. They're not breaking any rules. We saw the Yankees do this for years in the George Steinbrenner era. The Red Sox, the Cubs, they have spent big. The Mets, Charlie's team, they have spent big. They got the biggest free agent out there this offseason, which, by the way, I think that would have really been the tipping point for people, Charlie, if the Dodgers would have signed Juan Soto.
I agree.
So I guess we could thank you for that.
Can I just interject one thought while you brought up the Mets? When Steve Cohen bought the Mets, the league implemented what is known as the Steve Cohen tax. They were so afraid that a guy that rich was going to be able to come in to the league, spend as much money as humanly possible to buy championships, to the point where if you're over a certain threshold, you get penalized for it. The Dodgers have been doing this deferral thing. They have $1.2 billion in deferrals between Blake Snell, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Teoscar Hernandez, Will Smith, Tommy Edmund, Shohei Ohtani, and Tanner Scott. Nothing is being done. Why? So you're so afraid that somebody's going to spend money, but a team that is saying, oh, yeah, we'll just put it on the back end.
Yep.
And yeah, that's good.
They'll just keep doing that for years.
Nothing. Not even we'll look into it.
And people will yell from the mountaintops, well, they're just trying to buy a championship. Yeah, they are.
They already have.
They won a championship last season. Whether or not you count the COVID year, that's up to you. But they have turned into what the Yankees were like in the 2000s. And they're allowed to do it. Charlie brought up the deferred money. Yeah, that's a very annoying loophole that they're kind of going through. But the league is allowing them to do it. And until they do something about it, it won't matter. It is a very slanted game, the way that baseball is going. It's also weird that, yeah, the Mets made the huge splash of Soto. But outside of that, the Dodgers have pretty much cleaned up, which is what makes it different than what it was years ago. Like, the Yankees would sign and they would acquire the real big money players, but it's not like nobody else got in on the action. It is weird that not a whole lot of other teams have done anything. We can get on the Pirates about that, and I you know, put it out there what Noah said, how he doesn't think they will sign a multi-year free agent by the time he goes to Bradenton in a few weeks. But there are teams that they usually dish out much more money than what the Pirates do, and they've done next to nothing. Unfortunately, we can't blame the Dodgers for this. It's just the way the game has allowed it to go. 412-928-9370 if you want to join the conversation. A few minutes away from a debrief, Charlie Borges will run point on this one. You can follow us on Twitter. That's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.com. .net. Donnie Football in for the guys on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. .4:30 That means it is time for a debrief, but before that, I want to tell you that Mike's Beer Bar, the fan beer of the month, is Shoe Brew Brewing's Polyphonic and sales support the American Cancer Society. So get down to Mike's Beer Bar and get some of that. Should be a pretty big watch party tonight at Mike's. That is a notable Ohio State bar. And Ohio State playing in the national championship game against Notre Dame. So I would expect there to be quite a little crowd at Mike's Beer Bar. But Charlie, you have the floor for this one.
The debrief, January 20th, 2025. You know me, Donnie Football. If I have the opportunity to make fun of the New York Giants, I'm going to do that wholeheartedly. And this clip has been surfacing a lot more in the last 24, 48 hours. I'm going to play it here. It's from the off-season version of Hard Knocks. And this is Giants general manager Joe Shane talking to his children about who the Giants should draft in last year's draft.
Who do you want me to take? Give me a name.
J.J. McCarthy.
Jaden Daniels. Trade up and get him. Why not?
Okay, if Jaden Daniels...
We only get this job once. We try to win.
All right, Jaden Daniels.
His son, Carson, said, "Hey, Dad, you only get this job once. Why not try to trade up for Jaden Daniels?" Now, hindsight is 20/20, but if you look at who's in the NFC Championship game, on one side you have Jaden Daniels, who his son said, "Hey, Dad, try to trade up for him." And on the other side, one Saquon Barkley, who the New York Giants said, "Yeah, we don't need you anymore because we're going to keep good old Danny Dimes, Daniel Jones."
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely shelled themselves when they let Saquon walk and they decided to run it back with Daniel Jones. Smart kid. Because I think the best point that his son brought up is what you said. You may only get this job once. Take a big swing. Go for a splash. And look how much different things would have gone for them. I mean, I'll give them this. The guy they did draft is a stud of a player. Malik Nabers,
yes,
was phenomenal this year. So, yeah, they get a little bit of credit there because the guy they got is really good, and think about some of the quarterbacks he was working with this season.
Tommy DeVito, Drew Locke, Danny Dimes.
But there needs to be some of that fire, some of that thought with how teams go about things sometimes. And I know that that is just, it goes so against the slow and steady idea. But the thought of, hey, I may only have this job once. I'm in an unstable organization. They may can me after a short tenure. I should take a shot here. I should try to take a big swing. Now, yeah, it looks differently because of how good Jaden Daniels is. They could have done that. He could have sucked. And then where are they at?
Very true.
But the point is they went for it. They went for it, or they would have went for it, and we would have seen what happened with Daniels as a Giant.
It's one of those, what is it, Murphy's Law? Anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
I think that's the one, yeah.
They kept Daniel Jones. They had to release him because he was so bad at, what, week?
Well, he requested that.
Or he requested the release, but they benched him.
Yes.
In the first couple weeks of the year. You let go of Saquon Barkley, who then goes on to almost break the NFL's all-time single-season rushing record. And now both of your division rivals are fighting for a spot in the Super Bowl. And you have another top pick, but it's the third overall pick. And some people are projecting that both of the quote-unquote top-ranked quarterbacks that are in this draft are going to be gone by number three.
Maybe they'll sign Russell Wilson.
That would be amazing for me.
I mean, the Giants could end up here with... They could either try to move up, or they could end up with Travis Hunter.
Which isn't bad, but are you going to play him both ways in the NFL? When was the last time somebody played both ways in the NFL?
They would have to limit it, how much it could be done. But he seems to be a guy that could actually pull it off. Now, maybe they could lessen his importance at receiver since Neighbors is as good as he is. So he could still work both ways. I mean, Deion played both ways back in his day. Deion was playing baseball and football at the same time.
Very true.
Hunter seems to be a player of that ilk. But yeah, I mean, they're going to miss out on those quarterbacks because you would assume that Tennessee and Cleveland both go that route.
Can I put on my tinfoil hat theory for you there, Donnie?
Go ahead.
The Giants will draft either Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter, somebody like that. And they'll skip a quarterback for this year, and they'll bring in somebody who is absolutely terrible. Maybe they'll bring back Drew Lock or Tommy DeVito to be their starting quarterback.
I think I know where you're going.
And they will absolutely tank in the year 2025 because who's waiting in the wings to be drafted and as a top pick in 2026? Archie Manning. Nephew.
I had a feeling.
Of Giants soon to be, but he shouldn't be, Hall of Fame quarterback, Eli Manning.
I actually have the take on Eli that he is deserving of the Hall of Fame just for the playoff runs that he had. And it's going to work in his favor. Multiple things will work in his favor.
The name, the last name.
Beyond the numbers that he did collect over the years, the pedigree that his name carries helps. The second career that he has now had in the media will absolutely help. And not just that he won two Super Bowls and he is a two-time Super Bowl MVP. Who he beat in both of those Super Bowls will carry weight. He was the only guy to not only take down the most successful coach-quarterback combination of all time, he did it twice. One of which was when the Patriots were about to be the second undefeated team in football history. And he made one of the great plays in Super Bowl history, and then a game-winning touchdown pass, too. In Super Bowl 40...
Plaxico Burress?
Yep. Super Bowl 42. To Plaxico Burress.
I'll die on the hill that it was the Giants' defense in the one Super Bowl and then Lawrence Tynes in the other one.
Well, yeah, I mean, the defense was out of this world. I mean, they shut down a Tom Brady, Randy Moss-led offense that was reaching historic numbers. Yeah, I mean, the defense won that game. But Eli made... He certainly made his hay while the sun was shining on him in the playoffs, that's for sure. Plus all those other factors. He's going to get in. People just got to accept it.
I've accepted it. Doesn't mean I agree with it.
Do I think he was overall better than Ben or Philip Rivers? No. But that quarterback class will maybe go down as the second best ever behind 83.
Is Philip Rivers a Hall of Famer?
I think he'll get in. Might take a time or two. I don't think he'll have as easy of a way in as the other guys, but I think he'll get in. They'll have all three in there, I would imagine. Thank you, Charlie.
You're welcome, Dottie.